actual study, if you want to, we'll start by just flipping up there. We're in 1 Timothy, the second chapter of 1 Timothy. Timothy begins that chapter. Therefore, I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men. And we, you know, I went down through there, and I was thinking, wow, what an encouraging thing. You know, Paul's writing to this young pastor, and he's saying, first of all, we saw that last week he kind of gave us an introduction of what he was doing and why he was writing and some of the things that were going on. And now it's like Paul's going to start getting into the meat of things. And isn't it interesting? I think it's important, right? That he says first. You know, there are first things. There's a priority maybe to the things that the order of things. And so the first things, first I ask or I exhort you, basically, please be praying. So I got taken really on a wild goose chase here. And so knowing that that's what Paul says, I wanted to kind of apply it to our situation, our time, maybe, you know, the church as a whole and our time as a whole, maybe our culture, our country. And so what I want to do, we're going to jump a couple places and then we'll wrap this kind of in a nice little package and make it hopefully make sense. Go to Ezekiel chapter 22. Ezekiel has been given a word from the Lord. And what I see in this part of Ezekiel's prophecy is we read this and you kind of get a sense, wow, this is what the world is at this time. But even more importantly than that, Ezekiel, through the Lord, is giving kind of a summation of, wow, not this is where the world is, but my goodness, this is where the church is. And when the church is at this place, whoa, this is not necessarily good. And so this is what Ezekiel says, verse 23. And the word of the Lord came to me saying, son of man, say to her, you are a land that is not cleansed or rained on in the day of indignation. Now, he starts going down through here, and it's very telling of what was going on in Israel at the time. The conspiracy of her prophets, that's not a good thing when you start out. Conspiracy is not a good word. We're hearing it today, you know, when it comes to our political climate, you know, and there's all this conspiracy out there. You know, what really was going on during an election, a national election? What really was going on between the different branches of government? What really was going on among these branches of government that have a lot of power? Yesterday, my world came crashing down. I went out to the mailbox and I'm coming in, I'm flipping through the mail, and there's this little card in there. And I go, what in the world is this? It looked like something official. Little postcard. And I look at it, and it says, the city of York Police Department is sending you this notice. You have not paid your parking ticket that was issued to you last Tuesday night at 12:15 in the morning. And if you do not send us $80,
by such and such a date, a citation will be issued to you, and you will be scheduled to appear in court to defend yourself. And I was thinking, the police state, they have me. I have not been in York, PA. I've driven through there once in my life. I went down and took the car and looked at my Jeep. No, that's not my license number. I went out to my pickup and I looked at my pickup. That is my license number. How'd they get my license number? What can I do? I have no security cameras at my house. I cannot prove that I did not drive to York, PA and illegally park last Tuesday night at 12:15 a.m. I was so upset, I was so mad. That cop made a mistake. How can I prove? Cops don't make mistakes. And I'm a liar. That's how it's going to be looked at. You know darn well that's how it's going to be looked at. And I was going, what is my recourse here? I don't have $80. That's a lot of money to send for something I did not do. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I was really mad. I called the Warren police. Not that they could do anything. I spoke to officer so-and-so. I said, when you issue a ticket in Warren, PA, because I called down there, they're closed. You know, big city, I mean, that's a pretty big city. York, they're closed. Little old Warren, they're open. That tells you something. So officer, I said, when you issue a traffic parking, I said, do you write down that license and then write down description of the vehicle? I said, because I was not there. No. We just typed the license number into the computer. And then if you don't pay or nothing, then they take the next step and look up your license number and get your name and all that. And I said, great. That's really encouraging news. So, who knows? You know, we'll give them a call and see what they say. I know what I pretty much know it. Or I'm very pessimistic. I can plead my case. You know, that's what he said. That's so funny. He said, now, were you any place last Tuesday where there were security cameras? I go, yeah, my bedroom, I got security cameras at 12:15 a.m. I can prove it. Of course not. Jeez. We were way off here.
We can fix that.
Conspiracy. They got a power, right? And so that, you know, we're hearing that, you know. Well, there's a conspiracy among the prophets. Whoa! There's a conspiracy in the leadership. You know, you might say the pastors, the priests, the God's people. Look, in her midst is like a roaring lion tearing the prey. That's not good. They have devoured people. That's not good. Jesus saw the crowds and saw the people and had compassion on them. He saw the person. His eyes went to the person with the greatest need and immediately stepped forward. You know what? I'm going to touch that person. I'm going to meet that need. He wasn't devouring people. They have taken treasure and precious things. They have made many widows. Wow, in their midst. Her priest, wow, the prophets, now the priest. You know, this is very, very pervasive. You know, from the top to the bottom is what we're going to see here. Her priests have violated my law and profaned my holy things. They have not distinguished between... This is the thing that got me right here. Think of where we are today. They have not distinguished between the holy and the unholy. Wow.
nor have they made known the difference between the unclean and the clean. Whoa. Wow, if that's not today. They have hidden their eyes from my Sabbath so that I am profaned among them. So the prophets, the priests, and what I kind of got here is that as the church goes, the society goes, the culture goes. Now they're her princes. And it's almost like, here's the prophets and the priests, now the princes. The princes are the leadership in the government, right? Her princes in her midst are like wolves, tearing the prey, to shed blood, to destroy people, to get dishonest gain. Wow. What a sad, sad commentary of where not only the Israelites, but the nation itself is. Her prophets plastered them with untempered mortar. See, what he's saying is that untempered mortar could be mortar that, you know, you're mixing up the mortar and you don't put the right ingredients in it. And so the right ingredients haven't gone into this thing. And so you put it in the cement blocks or in the stone, and then because it's untempered, it's not mixed right, it's not made right, the weather and the elements come and it just falls out. Yeah, you go to Warren, you know, Micah has some old houses down in Warren, and you go in the basements and after 100 years, finally the mortar's coming out of that sandstone. But 100 years, that's pretty good, I'd say. You know, so you got to remortar it and repoint it and so on. It's time. But what he's saying is that the prophets, the pastors, the right ingredients aren't there. What are the right ingredients? Well, I'll go to Acts chapter 2, verses 40 and following. You know, we're a people of prayer. We're a people of koinonia, fellowship. We're a people that are around the Word. That these are the ingredients that make up, you know, what we're doing. Psalm, Kim said this, 146, is that it? No, 138. Psalm 138:2, is it? I have magnified, I have exalted, God says, my word above my name. So that gives you a little thing that, you know what, God, he takes his word pretty serious. His word's pretty important. And so, you know, when we're not even in the word, you know, when the church as a whole this morning and throughout the day, you know, when we're just up telling funny little stories, you know, when we might on an overhead flip up one verse and then be talking about whatever it is in the world they talk about, you know, they're not in the Word just because they throw a verse up there. They're not in the Word. And so when that's where the church is, you know, wow, we're in trouble. We're in trouble when the priority is not what it needs to be. The ingredients aren't right. And so we have a whole group of people that are running around, you know, thinking they're saved, and they're probably not even saved because they haven't heard the gospel. Their lives, there's no difference in their lives. You know, if you looked at them, and I've said this before, that as a Christian, when I come to the Lord, I'm born again. If I'm born again, Paul says in Corinthians 5:17, that I'm a new creature. I'm something that never existed before. I am radically changed. And if I haven't been radically changed, I probably haven't been born again. And so we've got to start getting back to the truth of what the Word teaches. If I've been radically changed and born again, then I have convictions and my life has been transformed. I'm not going to mess around with that stuff. You know, why should I mess around with that? That's what I was involved with. That's what was killing me before I was saved. Why would I go back and mess around with it? Why would I think that I have power over it now that I can be involved in it?
And so you look at Christianity today, and you know the statistics. My marriage should be different. I mean, we'll just grab one of those sayings. You know, my marriage should be different. Doesn't mean that I can't go through trouble. It doesn't mean that I can't go through separation. It doesn't mean that I can't go through a failure. But I would look at that as a whole and say, wow, we ought to be doing better than the world, and we're not. So there's a problem. There just is, and that's what Ezekiel is saying here. You know, and so he's saying that and I like that, her prophets plastered them with untempered mortar, seeing false visions and divining lies for them, saying, thus says the Lord God, when the Lord had not spoken. You know, you watch these guys on TV and they make these, it's so goofy. And then thus says the Lord. They're false prophets. There's nothing true about them. And they're doing just what is being said here. Their whole goal and their whole motivation is the pocketbook. And that's all it is. It's the pocketbook and power and notoriety. You know, look at their hearts. You know, look at their life. Look at their lifestyle. I'm telling you right now that if God bestowed a certain gift on me, whatever that would be, man, if it was the word of wisdom, I'd have the biggest counseling center in the world. I'd be helping people as much as I could be helping them because God is doing it. If it was healing, I would not be in any arena or any church. I'd be in the hospitals, and that's where I'd be because that's where healing's needed. And it's just a farce. It's so sad to see it. And so it's plastered, it's untempered mortar. That's all it is. It's untempered mortar. So he talks about this is what I got. Verse 30, it hit me then when I was reading this. So I sought for a man among them. You know, I think Paul's saying to Timothy here, Timothy, you're the man. You're the man, and the first thing I want you to do. We already saw last week, Paul says, Timothy, you're the guy, you stand. Ephesians 6, stand. We're sitting here, and God's saying, you know what, here's a group of people. You know, it's time to stand. It's time to stand up. So, I sought for a man among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap on behalf of the land. On behalf of the land and the people. And when I read that, I was so convicted. It says, God, am I one of those guys? Am I willing to make a wall? You know, when you make a wall, there's a, you know, when you make a wall, you put, I don't know. We're hearing a lot about a wall today, right?
Yeah.
I need a wall. And Mexico's going to pay for it. Yeah, the whole thing, you know, we need a wall. What's the wall do? It's a defense, right? It's going to bring separation. Hopefully it'll bring order to maybe a chaotic situation, whatever. I mean, years and years ago, I mean, Doug knows and Bob, you know, when we lived in California, you know, going to Tijuana and just, you know, how goofy it was and how easy it was and so on and so forth. So I don't know I haven't been out there now forever. And so I don't know what it's like now. I know San Diego built a wall across there. That didn't exist when I was out there. And so the whole thing is, you know, we think of what a wall is. And so as a man, as a woman, you know, make a wall. You know, I think, you know, make a wall for, you know, what walls are in my life, in essence? You know, am I, again, am I, my life, is it separate? How I approach life, how I deal with individuals, how, you know, what I'm involved with just in my life, am I separate from the world? Am I, is there a difference? Is there, have I been transformed? And then am I willing to stand in the gap? You know, we look at this and we could say, well, you know, this is, wow, this is not good. And this was back then, but I think we can maybe move it up and apply it to now. And I'm going, whoa, you know, maybe so, you know, maybe I could be one of those, maybe I could be a guy. Maybe I could be standing in the gap. Paul's saying, Timothy, take a stand, then first of all, pray. Pray. Do I pray? Am I praying? Look at Isaiah. I didn't put this in the outline. It just popped into my head this morning, Isaiah 5. And so I just went there and looked at it. Because it's interesting that God normally doesn't just say it once. He says it a number of times, maybe through a number of different people. He's saying the same thing to Isaiah. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just look at Isaiah 5, 20. It's the same sense. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. There isn't everything just blurred today? There are no like lines of black and white. It's all blurred. And it's so interesting just to watch and to listen. I don't even know who it was. I think it was Gail Erdman once when I was listening to him. He was saying, yeah, you know, because he's an older guy. He said, yeah, I guess I'm not going to, you know, walk and live in sin now because I just have a midlife crisis. You know, how things are redefined. You know, midlife, that sounds, well, everybody has that, right? Everybody has that, just a little crisis, and it's in midlife, and don't worry too much about it. But if you say that's, you're in sin. You know, I have a midlife crisis, so I got to go buy a sports car, or maybe I'll buy a motorcycle, or maybe, you know, all of a sudden I'm not going to be home anymore, and I'm going to be back in the bars, or maybe I'm down at the gym all the time. Maybe I got to take some supplements and maybe, you know, a midlife crisis. And then maybe there'll be a little gal out there. See what I'm saying? That no, it's sin. And it sounds so much better, you know, to have the midlife. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Wow. Who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. It's amazing. That's what's happening today. That's what you're hearing today. So Ezekiel says, is there anyone among you that would build a wall and stand in the gap? Timothy, take a stand and pray. Would we be willing this morning to take that stand and pray and to be that person that you know, just where we're at? I can at least do that. I can do that. I can do that in the day and age that we live in. When I was reading this, I think, is there any examples of, you know, we get Jesus, of course, you know, is there any examples of? And I guess I hit on this because we're at this in our Sunday night study. It's not like I want to give that study twice or whatever, but I say, man, there is a guy. And he's one of my favorite guys. Moses. Moses was a guy. Turn to Exodus 33. Moses was a guy, and he's such an encouragement. Because when I read about him, I think, you know what? I could make the decisions and the choices that Moses made. I can do it. If simply I want to do it. To set the stage here, things were chaotic. Moses had gone up and was meeting with God. While he was gone, Aaron and the people. Boy, did they take the wrong road. They fashion a golden calf, an idol, and the whole company turns and chooses to worship that golden calf. God's not happy. He's not happy at all. Look at chapter 33. That's just real quick, the background. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Depart and go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, saying to your descendants I'll give it." I like Moses because, again, Moses was one of those guys. He was a neat pastor. That's how I look at Moses. Now, he went through things I've never gone through. I don't think, maybe in their minds, if we were in another day and age, they'd probably want to kill me. I mean, they wanted to kill him. How many times did they say, "Man, you, what in the world are you doing, Moses? You know, we hate you, we're going to kill you, you're, what a loser. Oh, we just stayed in Egypt," and all of a sudden. And Moses, rather than get mad at him, I mean, one time in anger he reacts when he whacks that rock. You know, this stiff neck. I like how God's going to describe him here. But what Moses does most of the time, what's he do? You tell me.
Pray.
He prays. Man, that's what we got to do. We got to pray, pray, pray. That's how Paul begins. He's telling to pray, pray, pray. Moses is what a prayer warrior. He falls on us. He's praying. He's praying to God, but he's praying for those people. You know, when I enter into a situation, why am I not on my knees praying for that person? Why am I not, you know, if Jim would offend me today, why don't I start, I'm going to pray for him. How many times, man, no. Oh, look, boy, he did that. And then instead of praying for him, you know, I'm running this thing, you know, and every time it runs through, then it just becomes bigger, 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 bigger. Wow, he has done the unforgivable, unpardonable thing. I'm done with him. And I'm calling myself a Christian. I'm calling him my brother. And that's how I'm treating him? Man, why didn't I? And then there's steps that I immediately should have. I'd say pray first, and then boom. If God doesn't show me the truth, and I think if I would pray for Jim, God, I think God has the ability almost to show me, well, geez, I've only known him for 40 years. I've only been in his house how many times? We've been brothers for forever. In all that time, he's not out there destroying me and doing all this stuff. And I must have misunderstood. Or you know what? He must be going through something really bad in his own life. And in a sense, almost, he's maybe even crying out, you know, would somebody please pray for me? Would somebody please come and put their arms around me and give me a hug? And here I'm ready to that's it. I'm done. How sad. Pray, 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 pray. And so Moses, that's what I like about him. You know, this was not an easy thing to do. He was trying to obey God and do what God told him to do and realize that the things that God was telling him to do, they'd never done that before. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, let's go collect the manna today because we've always done that. No, it never happened before. Oh, yeah, let's just run across the sea here because everybody does that every day. No. Jeez, if I step in there, I'm going to drown. But God says to step. Wow! You know, these were not, I don't think these were easy things to do. And so Moses is trying to do that and lead the people and encourage the people and provide, and he did provide for the people. And yet then, and so I would have said, yeah, God, why don't you wipe out about 3/4 of them, especially the ones that are whining all the time, and then maybe we'll be happy. Moses never does that. And it amazes me. Why? Because he was praying all the time. He had a heart of Jesus. And Jesus wishes that none would perish. That's why Moses wasn't saying, kill them all, because he had Jesus' heart. Jesus wishes that none would perish, that they'd all come to salvation. And so it just is amazing. And so depart and go up from here, you, verse 1, 33 am, and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, saying to your descendants, I'll give it. You know what? Get moving. Go on up. Now, what was this land? It was a land flowing with milk and honey. Beautiful. Now, I will send my angel. I'm going to send an angel before you. I'll drive out the Canaanite, Amorite, Hittite, Perizzite, Hivite, Jebusite. I'm going to give you victory. I'm going to fight for you. Verse 3, go up to a land flowing with milk and honey. This is the kicker. Go up. Here it is. I'm going to, even though you have really committed spiritual adultery, you have rejected me, you have turned to another God. You know what? I gave you a promise, and nothing you can do can break that promise. I'm still taking you to your promised land. I'm still giving it to you. You didn't lose that. Even though you've done what you've done. But, there's a change in it. And it's not a good one. For I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. I looked that up, and right away when I read what that meant in the Hebrew, I know what it is. I grew up with it. You grew up around animals. If you grew up, you know, with horses, we had, you know, horses, we had steers, we had cows. How many of you know what a horse does when it doesn't want to do what you want it to do? Immediately, it stiffens. It wants to go its way. Now, what's neat with a horse, we've learned, and it's even biblical. The bit in the mouth of that horse gives you the power, because that's not a comfortable thing. You know, can you imagine that? You know, just yanking on that baby. You know, you can make that horse do what you want it to do. I mean, we had this horse, my sisters, Kathy. They whined. Oh, Dad, we want a horse. So finally, my dad broke down. Okay. I'm going to get you a horse. You got to take care of it. And so he went out and bought Star. This stupid horse. You get on that horse. And when you get on it and you're in the barn, that horse didn't even want to move. And then you start walking away from the barn, and it was just like. And it'd do that the whole way down. You know, you get away from the barn where it can see you, then it kind of loosen up. And then as soon, I'm not doing this, but I got to do it because you got that bit. I mean, you're just fighting that thing the whole way. And then as soon as you turn that head, like back towards the bottom, you better be hanging on. Because that thing would just fly back to the barn. It didn't want to be ridden. It didn't want to go on any adventures. It didn't want to go exploring down the woods or go on any trails. I want to stay in the barn and eat. And that's really what all they do, you know. Just like, My gosh, stand in the barn, eat, and then clean up after them. And so that the stiff, just that stiff-neckedness, that's what it's referring to. In the Hebrews, it's oxen, because they would be dealing with oxen. Just and you can, if you're around animals, again, you'll know they were stiff-necked. You know, I'm just, God, you tell me, and I'm not going to do it, you know. And so they're a stiff-necked people. But the kicker, the fearful thing was, God, you've been with us. Visibly, you're with us. The pillar of cloud during the day, cloud in the day, I can see your presence. Fire at night, you're with us. Now that presence isn't going to be with them. That's a scary thing. The nearness, the intimacy was not going to be there anymore. So what are we to do? That's the whole question. All right. And when the people heard this bad news, they mourned. No one could put on his ornaments. For the Lord had said to Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are a stiff-necked people, second time. I could come down in your midst in one moment. Dust. Consume you. Now therefore, take off your own ornaments, that I may know what to do with you. So the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by Mount Horeb. Interesting. The Israelites weren't, quote, ornamental people. Until they came out of Egypt. They came out of Egypt, and they came out of Egypt in a sense with Egypt's wealth, if you go back and read that. The Egyptians gave them the gold and the silver, the ornaments. And it's interesting that the Israelites began to wear their ornaments. What else did they do? Well, we didn't read it, but they made the gold calf. You know, Egypt, they worshiped, they had idols for everything, right? The Nile, the river itself, the crocodile, everything. The sun, they worshiped all these gods. And so what you see is that the Israelites came out of Egypt. Man, they did not want to leave Egypt behind. How many times did they whine? Oh, that we could go back to Egypt. Oh, look how good we had it there. Oh, wow. You know, we just love Egypt. Same way after the 70-year captivity. All the Jews could have went back to Jerusalem. Zerubbabel goes first. Then Ezra. Nehemiah, then Ezra. Each time those guys went back, only a small group of people went back with them. Why? Because they loved Babylon. Now, there Israel's going to the land. One thing I think God said, you know what? Do you really love me? Are you willing? Just what we were saying. Are you willing to build a wall? Are you willing to be separate? Are you willing to stand in the gap, in a sense? Are you Israelites or are you Egyptians? It's kind of what he's saying. If you're Israelites, strip off your ornaments. And I just think, how many ornaments, you know, do I allow in my life? I mean, I can remember God... Kim said it once to me, very gently. This is when we were first married, in the first few years of marriage. But then later on, I get back into it certain ways. You know, if I have a chance, I love to go to the woods. I love to be in a tree stand. Some people think that's so boring. I love it. I love to... you know, be in the wilderness. I love to chase animals. I love it. I love to kill them. If I can kill them, boy, I love it. And so the Lord, like, convicted me. Really, a number of times. And I look at it as an ornament. You know, what ornament do you have? I mean, I can tell you, I have no trouble. I've told you this. 3 weeks in a row, 2 weeks, even 2 weeks in a row. And unless you've done it, you have no idea what it's like. Micah does most of it. But you start out by packing up a mountain. You know, 3, 4, 5, 6 miles. And everything that you're going to live with, it's on your back. And I'm not talking a hill. I'm talking a mountain. And so they call them switchbacks. All you're doing is, yeah, yeah. But even on the switchbacks, you're like that the whole time. Just going up, 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 up. I'm willing to do it. Micah could do it in 3 hours, 4 hours. I can do it in 8. So you're just doing it. I'm willing to do it. This is fun. Now this is fun. Then I'm willing to be out there in the wilderness in a 2-man tent, eating. I take Mountain House with me. I like rice and chicken. We eat 2 a day, rice and chicken. And you think that's awesome. Listen, after 10 days of rice and chicken, we get up at 4 o'clock every morning. And once we're up, all you're doing is you're walking. And sometimes it's probably 5% of it's like that. 95. Why aren't the elk outside my tent? Why are they way up there? They're way up there all the time. So you got to go way up there and get them. Takes you all morning to get way up there. And then all night to get way down, back down. There aren't paths. All right, they're not, you know, it's not like going to hey, let's go to Jake's Rocks. You know, they got that night, that it's paved, right? No. No, it's a wilderness. You're not allowed to touch anything. Well, you can touch it. You can't cut it. So you're walking. You're not just walking. You're climbing. You're climbing over trees. I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to do it for 3 weeks. I can get up 4 o'clock every day. We don't have an alarm clock. You wake up. It's 4 o'clock. You're ready to go. You know, you get back at dark. You go to bed. Oh, it's the most fun I've ever had in my life. And God's saying, why can't you get up? You do that. And this is how God convicted me. It was an ornament. When you get home, you don't get up early. You do get up early, but you don't spend time with me. You have all this other stuff. You can. And then it's always a chore, Jeff. It's always a chore to spend time with me. Why? Because you got ornaments in your life. Are you willing to give those ornaments up? You know, what ornaments? What's keeping you? What in Egypt is keeping you from intimacy with Jesus? Well, Moses, that's the first thing God says. He says, you know what, you gotta be separate. You've gotta build a wall. And then I'm going too long. So what I'm gonna do, look at what Moses does. Moses then takes his, God had been coming down to them in the midst of them. He said, I'm not gonna do that no more. Can't do it anymore. He's sinful people. What's Moses do? He tears his tent down. He pitches his tent outside the camp. Now, God says, I'm going to meet with you. Moses wants to meet with God. So he, again, you just think, I mean, I can put my little 2-man tent up in about 10 minutes. Take it down, probably less than, I mean, just like these fiberglass things. You know, you got to look at what their tents were. You know, they might be like an outfitter's tent. Yeah, it wasn't an easy thing. He tears it down. He moves it outside the camp. Then he goes and meets with God. God says, I'll meet with you. Come out here and I'll meet with you. He goes out. God meets with him. It's visible that God meets with him. Anyone can go out and meet with God. How many million Israelites are there? When you read down through there, I don't know, 2 million? Well, as Moses does this, it says that the men would get up, stand in the door of their tents, and watch what was going on out at Moses' tent. That's interesting to me. Moses actually made his place of dwelling a place of worship. That's another little sidelight. Is my place of dwelling a place of worship? And so he met with God. God's presence was there. Now, to wrap it all up, Joshua goes out there and it says he never leaves there. Moses would go leave there and go speak to the people. My whole point is that I think it was available to any guy, any family, any Israelite. Moses and Joshua have intimacy with God. Talk with him. In fact, it says God talked with Moses as a friend. Ultimately, Moses goes through these, it's almost like degrees. God, I'm going to meet with you here. God meets with him. God, I don't want to go anywhere unless your presence goes with me. Will your presence? Yes. God answers him. Yes, my presence will go with you. Woo, that's good. All right. That's enough. No. God, I'd really like to know you more. God, would you show me who you are? God, I want to see you. Moses just keeps going. It's almost like pushing, in a sense, pushing God further. You know, what will God's response be? Well, I think Moses wanted a good thing. He simply wanted an intimacy with God. He wanted to know God. That's a beautiful thing, I think, in God's eyes. And so every time God responds to Moses like, okay, Moses, yeah, you're getting it. Yeah, I'll reveal myself to you. Now, there are a couple conditions in how he does that, but we read all the way down there, man, if I come in your midst, I'm going to consume you. Man, I destroy you. Man. And then when ultimately God, remember what God does? He puts Moses in the cleft of the rock, covers Moses, passes by, and there's a whole thing with that. I don't have time. But what does God declare when he passes by? I'm angry and I'm going to take care of you and you better... No. And all the... What? Goodness of God passed by Moses. What a God. A good God. He's such a graceful God. He desires to be intimate with us. He desires to commune with us. And my only question was, and this is what God was just like, Ezekiel's question, Jeff, Esther, right? For such a time as this. I lose track of stuff, you know, like, yeah, I can look back. Oh, I wish. Oh, I wish I was with Jesus on the boat in Galilee. My life would be so wonderful and it'd be so different. No, God created you. He created me. He purposed us for right now, right today, for such a time as this. Will I be that man, that woman that will build that wall and stand in the gap in the day and age, and choose to go into God and be with God and be intimate with God and know God in the day and age that I live in? That's all he's asking. And I see that we didn't go through that chapter in the second chapter there, but Paul says, I desire, I exhort every individual. Prayer, supplication, thanksgiving, to be praying what? For all men. Is it any different now? Shouldn't I be praying? Shouldn't I be, you know, when I'm intimate with God, and that's the whole key, see? Because Moses, again, I think he could have said, you know what? He could have flipped them all off. You know, just, you see him up there you know, in front of everybody and see ya. That's what we want to do. And it's like, no, when I have that intimacy, what happens? I'm transformed more into his image. I have his heart. I begin to have his heart. It's an amazing thing. When I choose, and I'm going to force myself to have that intimacy and know that presence, all of a sudden, God, where did this come from that I would love another? I'm concerned about another. I have a love for people. I kind of wish that they don't perish now, rather than, God, go get them. You know what they deserve? What they reap what you sow, buddy. And I'm right there, like, cheering them on almost, you know. Have you ever wanted to tell somebody, go to heaven? No. We used to go walk up to people here, walk up to somebody. Hey, how to heaven are you? Because you always hear the other. How to heaven are you? They expect the other. It's kind of funny, but yeah, that's got to be our heart. Would we consider that today? And again, it's kind of like we didn't go through that chapter, but that was just heavy. Like that, I just opened my Bible and it's like the Exodus there, Ezekiel. And I go, Lord, what? And I started reading that. And I go, whoa, boy, it's a powerful stuff that I would be the church. And that I would be willing to build a wall and stand in the gap. That I would see Moses and say, wow, you know what? That's available. In fact, Jesus is standing there just desiring that I would commune with him. Wow. To commune with him and to know him. How we need that today. Lord, help us. Lord, help us to heed, I guess, be willing maybe. To take a step and make a decision to choose. Even to go outside the camp and meet with you. Lord, to just experience that and know what that is like. Lord, to know your presence, to desire your presence. Lord, to see what happens in our lives, Lord, as we're in your presence. And Lord, just see how that transforms our thinking and Lord, changes our heart. Lord, really, Lord, how it clarifies, Lord, our vision as we begin to see things clearly and truthfully. Lord, where we wouldn't be blurring the lines. Lord, we'd see what's holy and what's unholy. See what's clean and unclean. And Lord, more than even that we would see people in a way that you see them. Broken down and Lord, in need of healing, in need of a Savior. Lord, that we would have your heart, that none would perish. So Lord, fill us with your Spirit this morning. And Lord, help us to see, Lord, in our own place, Lord, our own life, even today, what it would mean. And even if we've done it, maybe we need to redo it. Lord, that if today we would say, you know what? I'm taking a stand. I'm building this wall. And Lord, I'm going to stand in the gap. Lord, I'm going to know your presence. Lord, a little more intimately than I have
this past week, Lord, this past month, this past year. So, Lord, do what you will. In Jesus' name. Everybody said,
Amen. Amen.